The Book Nook on WISO was presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and it's my pleasure to welcome back to the program today Ian Rankin. Hello, Ian.
Hey, how are you doing, Vic?
I am so glad that you have a new book coming out, Ian. I've been waiting for this, and it made my day when I got my copy in the mail. It's called Midnight and Blue, and I've been wondering, Ian, since the last time we talked, I remember mentioning to you, well, gosh, you know, John Rebus, he's getting kind of old. Are you going to, like, start doing prequels or something? And then I got to the end of the book, and I saw, oh, my, there's a TV show, and it's a young Rebus, and you didn't tell me this last time.
Well, maybe last time I didn't know it was going to happen. Yeah, the TV show, the screenwriter, the scriptwriter, he decided he wanted to get a young, vigorous Rebus who could get in fights and chase suspects down a street, but he wanted it set in the present day. So for hardcore fans, it was a little bit of a kind of jarring moment for them. It took them a little time to get used to the idea of a young Rebus in the present day, but it's gone down really well in the UK, and we're looking at selling it overseas, and we're looking at season two.
And I take it you're not writing it.
I do not write it. It's a guy I've known for a long time who's called Gregory Burke, Greg Burke. And he's a screenwriter. Before he was a screenwriter, he was a playwright. And the two main actors in it, including the actor who plays Rebus, Richard Rankin, no relation, who's better known to American audiences from his role in Outlander. He was given his first big role on stage by Gregory Burke. There was a play that Greg Burke did called Black Watch, which is about the UK regiment, the Army regiment, the Black Watch. And that was Richard Rankin's first big role on stage. So he loved working with Gregory Burke again. And he's a great actor. I've never watched Outlander, so I had no idea. But he's a really good actor.
Well, I'm looking forward to that being released in the U.S. My guest is Ian Rankin. His new one is Midnight and Blue. And I know you'd rather talk about anything but books, but let's talk about this book a little bit just to kind of pique the interest of our listeners. Rebus, in the last book, his nemesis, you don't really give much of this away in the story, but we need to at least say Rebus is in prison. This is a masterstroke here. I love this.
Well, I thought the last book, Heartful of Headstones, might be the final book. I've often thought that in the past, and it's never quite worked out. So that book ended with Rebus basically at his Reichenbach Falls. It ended up with him on trial for murder. I thought that's a great ending to the series, but I'm afraid fans disagreed with me. They said, we need to know what happened in that courtroom. And I thought about it. I thought, what does happen in the courtroom? Well, he's found guilty. Well, if he's found guilty, he's sent to jail. So we've suddenly got an ex-cop in jail in his 70s, surrounded by people who hate his guts because he used to be a cop, surrounded by people he put in jail who he needs protecting from, and then there's a murder. It's a locked cell mystery. There's a tradition in the crime novel of the locked room mystery. There's no way this crime could possibly have happened. I thought, what if we do that in a jail cell? So there's a murder in a jail cell. Nobody knows who did it or why or how, and there's only one guy they can turn to, and suddenly John Rebus is at the center of events. So it just all clicked into place, Vic. It clicked into place, and I thought, I need to write this book.
Yeah, I'm telling you. I enjoyed it so much, having that tension of Rebus essentially investigating a murder from inside a prison with all these prisoners not necessarily enjoying his presence. And then on the outside, we have this other thing going on. Years ago, I had you on the show for your first book in another series featuring a guy named Malcolm Fox. And when I read that first book, what was it, The Complaints?
Yeah.
Was that the first one? I remember thinking, well, you know, this guy, he's kind of annoying, but he's not a bad guy particularly. But he's kind of bounced through the series now with Rebus since then, since you brought Rebus back from retirement. And in this new book, Malcolm Fox really isn't the greatest guy. He's really got his own agenda here.
Yeah, I mean, Fox for a long time worked for the complaints, which is like internal affairs, investigating cops like Rebus. And Rebus is the one who got away. He's the one he reckons should have been put in jail for his many misdemeanors, but Fox could never quite catch him. Now, Rebus is in jail, so Fox finds himself in a situation where he can gloat, as it were. But Rebus keeps turning the tables on him. He knows more than Fox does. He's a cleverer cop than him. He's a better cop than him. And he keeps managing to foil this guy and make his life a bit of a misery. So Fox is one of these cops who's never going to be quite happy because he never gets the result he wants to get. When I started thinking about the book, I thought of it as only being set in jail, but I found that very claustrophobic.
Mm.
There was a lot I couldn't do because the whole book was going to be set in prison behind four walls. So the cops would come into the jail. If there's a murder in jail, cops from outside come in to investigate. So I got that connective tissue with the outside world. Then I thought, what if there's a plot happening on the outside that is tangentially connected also to Rebus and other people in the jail? And suddenly I've got the inside and the outside. And I was much more relaxed once I got that. Once I got the outside world and the inside world of the prison interacting, that was a much better place for me.
And we're also outside the prison with another case going on because, of course, Rebus's protege, Siobhan Clark, is still out there, and she has her own twisted history with Malcolm Fox. And there's a missing young woman that they're investigating a situation on. And I love this thread because this is a wild case, this outside case that's going on. It's nice to get out of the claustrophobia of the prison and actually be out on the street a little bit.
Yeah, it is. And it's a very different kind of story. I mean, it involves the online world. It involves sextortion. It involves young people in trouble, young people in jeopardy, and parental stress when a young member of your family goes missing and you start to look around you for who could possibly have been responsible or what might have happened to them. And so you get that very familial crime or mystery going at the same time as you then jump back to the jail, and in the jail you've got this very fixed crime. And the thing about the stuff in the jail is the guy who's been killed, the prisoners all think the staff must have done it. The staff all think the prisoners must have done it. This place is a powder keg.
Mm.
It's about to go up. So Rebus is really up against it. He's got to solve that crime very quickly. And at the same time, he's being visited by cops from the outside who are working on the missing person case, the young girl going missing case, and he's trying to help them as best he can, or they're bouncing ideas off him. So his skill set is necessary for both cases.
Hmm. And we also have the element of the missing nemesis, Big Jer Cafferty, and a power vacuum that's been created because without Big Jer around, even though he was living in semi-retirement, he was still keeping his fingers in things. And we have this vacuum going on, which is another big part of the story, because one of the other prisoners incarcerated in this place is the aspiring crime lord who Rebus has got to deal with. This tension that you create is just wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, a few books ago, there was a young wannabe crime lord, Daryl Christie, and Daryl ended up going to jail. And so when Rebus goes into jail, Daryl is there, and he's happy that Rebus has dispatched his nemesis because that has left the city wide open to him. Even though he's in jail, he now controls the city through his gang. So he protects Rebus to a certain extent, gives Rebus a little bit of freedom. But he's in jail, so obviously gangsters on the outside are thinking, well, we can step in, we can take over, his territory is up for grabs. There's never a vacuum. You know, when one gangster leaves the scene, there's a power struggle. There's never a vacuum for very long. Bad people are always going to fill that gap to deal with the drugs, to take care of the prostitution and the people trafficking and everything else. It's like you don't get a vacuum. Wherever you've got a civilized capitalist society, you're going to get gangsters, you're going to get gangs, you're going to get criminals, you're going to get the underworld. And the Rebus novels have always dealt with Edinburgh, capital of Scotland, as being a city where the underworld and the overworld meet.
Mm.
So the people who are respectable and have everything, and the people who are traveling beneath the surface and doing nefarious things, there's a kind of bit of connective tissue between them as well.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. My guest is Ian Rankin, his new Rebus novel, Midnight and Blue. He joins us on the telephone in Scotland. And Ian, you just mentioned drugs. And in prison, you can get what you want if you know the right people. You can get your drugs. You can get your cell phone. And one of the funniest things, I love the humor of this. Rebus gets his hands on a cell phone, and it's so fun when Rebus like calls people on the outside, like, oh, this is John.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I did a lot of research on this book. I went to the prison in Edinburgh. I mean, the book is set in a real prison, HMP Edinburgh, His Majesty's Prison Edinburgh is real. I went there, I got a tour. The governor was very generous with his time. Introduced me to staff. I got to talk to prisoners. On the outside, I spoke to ex-prisoners, ex-members of staff. I did the research for it. And, you know, I said, look, do drugs get in? Yeah, they do. Phones get in? Yeah, they do. New technology is used all the time. So drones are used now to drop stuff into prisons that never used to be possible. In the past, you would launch a catapult over the wall in the hope that a prisoner on the inside would get whatever contraband you were introducing into the jail. Also, you occasionally get stories of prison guards who've taken bribes, so they will bring stuff into the jail. All of that let me give you a quick story. I went to the HMP Edinburgh, His Majesty's Prison Edinburgh, 2 days ago to talk to the prisoners. The librarian asked me to go in and give a talk. I thought, Ian, you better do this before the book is published. Because once the book is published, they might not be quite as happy to see you when they know what you've said about the jail. It's not always the most rosy depiction of human existence, a prison.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all kinds of stuff happening. You've talked about Rebus and his phone. Yeah, you get cell phones can get in there. But there's no privacy in a jail cell. You've got a spy hole so the wardens, the prison guards can see you at any moment. There's a little kind of alcove where the toilet is, so Rebus has to stand in the toilet to get a signal. I mean, that's all taken from things I was told when I was in the prison.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually what happened. The fact that the phone might run out of signal, he can't always get a signal. People on the outside, Siobhan Clark, his ex-colleague, or who, you know, Christine S. and another cop that he phones, they're going, oh my God, how are you managing to phone us from inside the jail? Those were fun bits to write.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of moment where Rebus on the inside and the outside world who think Rebus is gone forever because he's now in jail start to connect. That was a lot of fun to do.
Ian, you referred to the prison initially as His Majesty's, and then you slipped back a little bit to Her Majesty.
Yeah.
And that reminded me that I think since the last time I talked to you, didn't you add some kind of a title to your name?
Shortly before she died, Her Majesty the Queen, Queen Elizabeth, put me forward for a knighthood to become Sir Ian Rankin in her Platinum Jubilee honours list. Sadly, she then died before she could present me with the award, so it was presented by Princess Anne, her daughter. But I'm now Sir Ian Rankin, and I'm just so thrilled because I'm talking to you from Edinburgh. The home of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Mm.
So Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, born and bred in Edinburgh, based his detective, Sherlock Holmes, on one of his lecturers from the medical faculty at Edinburgh University. So to be the second Scottish crime writer from Edinburgh to be knighted was a big deal for me. and was very exciting. But of course, it means nothing. You know, Vic, it's not got me a hotel room. It's not got me an upgrade. It's not got me a better table at a restaurant. It's just three letters in front of your name, Sir Ian Rankin.
Mm-hmm.
But if my parents were alive, because they were blue collar people, never went to college or university, left school at 14, 15, got jobs, they'd be so happy and so thrilled that their son had made something of himself just from his imagination. You know, from having nothing, to using your imagination to make up stories, to be knighted in the Queen's Platinum Jubilee Honours List.
Well, I think it's wonderful. Congratulations. You don't get discounts on record albums or anything just because you're Sir Ian.
I get nothing. I mean, when I go to my local bar, they say, you know, Sir Ian comes in, they go, oh, where's your horse? and I say, well, I've tied it up outside. I mean, that's the kind of stuff I get. Everything in Edinburgh grounds you. It brings you back to earth with a jolt.
Yeah.
You know? But I went to Buckingham Palace, and my wife and son went with me, and we just had the most exciting day. That was a real thrill. And then afterwards, we went for some ice cream in the park across the street from the palace because it was a really hot day. And we ended up at an Italian restaurant. And it was just a nice day out in London as far as we were concerned. And the knighthood was part of that.
And so they're razzing you in the Oxford?
Oh, my God. They always razz me in the Oxford. They never get a free drink, never get anything, you know. I mean, as you know, Vic, people send me mail there. I get mail from the States and Canada and all around the world. People send me letters. They send me CDs of bands they think I should be listening to. They send me books by authors that I should be reading. I go in there for a quiet drink and I go home with my mail. It's like going to the post office.
Very convenient. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, and we're introducing you to your new favorite song. And today I have one of the great music lovers as my guest, Ian Rankin, and I follow you on Twitter, Ian, and I saw you grousing the other day. You just mentioned CDs, and you're talking about how vinyl's gotten so expensive that you're going back to CDs. Tell me about it.
Vinyl's getting ridiculously expensive. I mean, I just bought an album by The terrific band, but it's the first album in a long time. Double vinyl, it was like $50. You know, it was 40-odd quid, 40-odd pounds. And I was resistant to doing it. I thought I can stream that for pretty much free. But it was a beautiful artifact, so I thought I'd buy it. But yeah, recently I was going to buy an album by a woman called Isabel Campbell. She used to be in a band called Belle and Sebastian. And her latest solo album, I looked at the price of it on vinyl. I thought, nah, it's just too much. And then I saw it on CD. And if you bought the CD, you got a whole free CD of the songs in French. And she sings in French really well.
Oh, wow.
I thought, okay. I mean, I'd rather get it in on CD and get a whole bonus disc of stuff that I wouldn't get on vinyl than pay over the odds, than pay too much for the vinyl. So, yeah, I mean, I, as far as I know, music lovers, especially younger music lovers, are turning back to CDs because they're finding them just so much more affordable if they want the physical product. And often you do get extras. You've got an extra few tracks or an extra CD of stuff that you don't get when you buy the vinyl. But you know what? When it comes down to it, vinyl still sounds better.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
It just does. It sounds more warm and it sounds more human somehow.
Well, it's hopefully not digital. They've hopefully recorded it on the old analog equipment.
But these days, almost everything's recorded digitally.
Right.
I mean, that's for a good system. If you've got a really good music system, you don't notice the fact it's been recorded digitally. If you're listening on a pair of tinny earbuds or earphones, you'll notice that it's digital. But if you've got vinyl and you're playing it on a great system, the fact that it was recorded digitally, you'll lose that a little bit. It will take the edge off. The system will take the edge off the digital. You still can't beat a live gig. So on top of all of that, and the problem I've got is I get older. I'm 64 years old now. I can't stand for 2 hours anymore.
Oh.
So I go to a gig now and I go, any seats? You know?
Uh-huh.
They go, no, man, you're standing for 2 hours at the very back next to the noisy people at the bar. Oh, my God.
Yeah, welcome to the club, Ian.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
Yeah. The book is Midnight in Blue. Ian Rankin joins us. And I've noticed also you've been doing some traveling, Is there a spot that you've discovered out there in the world in all your journeys that you just absolutely loved and it really surprised you?
The last big trip we took, my wife and I, we flew to San Francisco, and we took a cruise ship from San Francisco to Auckland, New Zealand. So we crossed the Pacific. And it was 25, 26 days at sea with only three stops. We stopped at Honolulu, then we stopped at Samoa and Fiji before we got to New Zealand. And Samoa, I've got to say, the reason I wanted to go to Samoa was that that was the one of my favorite writers of all time, Robert Louis Stevenson, great Edinburgh writer, Treasure Island, Jekyll and Hyde, spent the last 4 years of his life in Samoa. He built his own house from scratch on a pineapple plantation, and it's now a museum. And I wanted to go there and pay my respects to one of the most famous, one of the greatest Edinburgh novelists. Samoa and the home of Robert Louis Stevenson. That's my new big find this year. It almost killed me, by the way, because after touring the museum, the house, they said, oh, you can walk up this hill to his mausoleum, but it's quite steep. And they were right. It was steep and it was long. It took almost an hour to climb up this hill to the mausoleum. It was like super hot and there was almost no air, no oxygen. It was just very humid. And of course, being a working class blue collar Scot, I didn't take any water with me. Three quarters of the way up, I thought, I don't think I'm going to make it. I think I'm going to die here on this hill. And they'll have to bury me next to Robert Louis Stevenson. So by the end of the climb, I was cursing him out for everything, for not being buried at sea level. So he made me work. Mm. He made me work to pay my respects.
Well, he was incredibly prolific, and it's often forgotten that he died so young. And
40s. So much great stuff. I mean, children's stuff, poetry, Treasure Island, Jekyll and Hyde, which is one of the great dark gothic crime stories. I mean, how many times have you seen versions of Jekyll and Hyde or updates of Jekyll and Hyde? It just gets to the heart of what it means to be human or what it means to commit an act of evil.
Mm-hmm. When I was in high school, I discovered An Inland Voyage. A lot of his stuff is fairly obscure, actually, because he produced so much of it. And yet he actually traveled a lot, obviously, and he was in this part of Ohio at one point. He was in Cincinnati. Yeah. And probably 25 years ago, I was at a garage sale at a little farm, and they had a box of old books, and I was digging around in the box, and I found a signed copy of a book by Robert Louis Stevenson in this box.
Whoa.
I was like, what?
Wow.
Yeah.
No, well, I'm officially jealous of you.
I couldn't believe it. I looked at it, and then I looked at the lady that was running the garage sale, and I thought, do I say anything to her about this, or do I pay my quarter?
I think I know the answer to that, Vic.
Yeah, well, I figured she probably had never heard of the guy, so she wouldn't care.
Well, he's at the heart of everything I write, you know. I mean, I started writing books when I was at Edinburgh University studying Scottish literature, and I was doing a PhD on the novels of Muriel Spark, who wrote the Miss Jean Brodie. Sadly, Maggie Smith just died, who played Miss Jean Brodie on film. Miss Jean Brodie took me back to a real Edinburgh character called William Brodie, who was the template for Jekyll and Hyde. He was a gentleman by day and a thief by night. He had two lives. And he had made a wardrobe that was in the young Robert Louis Stevenson's childhood bedroom. And so Stevenson's nursemaid told him a story, this guy who was both good and evil contained in the same person. And that must have gone in deep, because later on when Robert Louis Stevenson grew up, he wrote this book about a guy who was both good and evil. And everything I've tried to write about Edinburgh has been predicated on that notion that we all have the ability to be good and we all have the ability to be bad. And sometimes it's circumstance or who knows, human nature. What is it? Nature, nurture. Something makes us do something bad. And that is, you know, all crime fiction is predicated on that. Why do we human beings keep doing terrible things to each other?
Really, that is the big question. Ian Rankin joins us. His new one is Midnight and Blue. And I had no idea that you were thinking about ending the series with Headstones. And now I'm wondering what you're thinking at this point.
Yeah, I mean, no spoilers, but this one's got a pretty good end. My wife is very keen. I'm 64. I'll be 65 next year. My wife is very keen that I take my foot off the gas, as it were. And while we've still got our wits about us, we've still got our brain cells, and we've still got the use of our knees and our legs, that we just go off and do some more traveling and enjoy ourselves while we can. So she's very keen. I'm out of contract now. The Midnight in Blue was the last book of my contract. And she said, don't sign up for another big chunky contract of 4 or 5 books or even 3 or 2 books. If you get an idea for a book and you fall in love with it, write the book. Until that happens, let's just go traveling. So next year is filled with travel. We're doing quite a lot of traveling around the world. And so who knows? Who knows what will be next, mm-hmm. whether I'll get time to write a book, whether I'll feel like writing a book. I've got no ideas in my head as I talk to you. I don't know what's next for Rebus, if anything. I've got a stage play on just now, touring the UK, that might come to North America, which is Rebus, and I've enjoyed doing a stage play. There's a TV reboot, which, again, hopefully will come to the States sometime very soon. So all these projects are going to keep me fairly busy without me having to write too much. I don't know. It's never been a long-term project. I mean, I wrote the first Rebus book thinking that's it. One book and this guy's gone.
Mm.
Somehow he found a way to stick around, and I've been just hanging on to his coattails ever since. I quite like that. I quite like the fact that I don't know from 1 year to the next if I've got another book in me, and if I do, what that book might be.
Well, Ian, if this does end up being the last one, I think it's a great ending. So I'll just say that.
Yeah, it's a pretty good ending. But then the last one was a pretty good ending, and hey-ho, I ended up writing another book. Who knows? C'est la vie, Greg Lake would say.
There you go. And, of course, you've got the example of someone like Lee Child, who supposedly retired, and more power to him. I see he just put out a new story collection, did a little tour. He's still keeping his finger in there.
Yeah, I know. You can't. It's like an itch. It's like an itch. You have to keep scratching it. I mean, he's done the right thing. He's passed it on to his brother, who's a thriller writer, so Lee can just sit back and enjoy his millions. If my son showed any interest at all, I would pass the baton on to him. But I don't have a brother who's a thriller writer, and I don't have a son who's very interested in continuing my legacy. So the only person around who can write these books is me. So who knows? Who knows what happens next?
Well, these franchises that never end always kind of puzzle me. And
Sherlock Holmes.
There you go.
Keeps being reinvented for new generations, you know? I mean, it's just, people have said to me, oh, well, you know, Rebus is getting kind of old now. He's in his 70s and he's got trouble with his health. Just go back in time and do young Rebus. And I go, well, you know, maybe. If I get fed up and I think, well, what do I want to do with them? Maybe go back in time and to the time when all the bands were great bands. Let's have Rebus in the 70s.
Uh-huh.
Going to lots of gigs. Going to lots of great gigs.
I hear you. Well, Ian, one of the great pleasures of my life is reading your work, and one of the great pleasures of my career is talking to you about it. And it's been a joy to have you on the program again. Thank you so much.
All right. Always an honor to talk to you, Vic. And I'm sorry this time it's at a distance, because here I am in sunny Edinburgh and you're wherever the hell you are. Take care, man.
The book is Midnight and Blue. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McInnes.